a little further down, verse 12, one woe is past, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels or messengers which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And the four messengers were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year for to slay the third part of men. And the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000,000, and I heard the number of them. And thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them, having breastplates of fire and of jacinth and brimstone, and the heads of the horses were as the heads of lions, and out of their mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. By these three was the third part of men killed by the fire and by the smoke and by the brimstone, which issued out of their mouths, for their power or authority is in their mouth and in their tails, for their tails were like unto serpents and had heads, and with them they do hurt. And I'll stop reading there. We see that God's talking about locusts that are coming out of the bottomless pit to bring torment for 5 months. And also, we find four angels or messengers were bound in the great river Euphrates, and they were loosed. And when we read about the locusts on one hand, we read about the 200 million horsemen. On the other hand, we see a lot of similarities, and actually they're speaking of the same group of people. They're referring to those that God saved during the Great Tribulation. They're coming out of tribulation. And Revelation 7 tells us a great multitude came out of the Great Tribulation. And so in Revelation 9, God's giving us a description of what happened on May 21, because it's a five-month period, and we're in the midst of that right now, from May 21 through October 21, and both the locusts and the 200 million really are one and the same. They're pointing to the true believers. For instance, the locusts have tails, it says, verse 10, and they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power or authority was to hurt men 5 months. And look at the 200 million in verse 19. For their authority is in their mouth and in their tails. For their tails were like unto serpents and had heads, and with them they do hurt. The locusts have tails like scorpions. The 200 million have tails like serpents. And they're actually interchangeable, because you could look at Luke chapter 10. And we read about scorpions and serpents in verse 18 and following. And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Behold, I give unto you power. Now, that word's translated a lot of times as power, but when it's also translated as authority, it just helps me better to understand it, to make that substitution, that I give unto you authority to tread on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. Serpents and scorpions have to do with the power of the enemy. And so the locusts have tails like scorpions. The 200 million have tails like serpents. They're interchangeable. They're synonymous. God could have said, well, no, he couldn't, because he didn't do that, but if he had said the locusts have tails like serpents and the 200 million have tails like scorpions, it really would have been saying the same thing, that they're coming like or as. Not saying the locusts, who are the true believers, are scorpions or that they are serpents, But they're coming like this during this 5-month period because what the enemy, the power, the authority of the enemy, Satan's kingdom, all the false gospels, what they all have in common is there's no salvation. And I'm sorry we have to keep saying it, but we have to keep saying that. We have to say it again and again, no matter what you look at. You know, if we were doing a study on the grace of God, we'd have to say, if we were going to be completely honest, you know, how gracious God is, how wonderful it is to have His grace bestowed on you, but He's not doing it anymore. If you're going to talk about the grace of God or the love of God or the mercy of God, you know, in order to be honest with people, you can't just tell them about God's mercy and leave it so you have someone thinking, oh, God today might have mercy on me. Not when that's not possible. It wouldn't be honest. It wouldn't be honest to not add this information. And it affects so many things. What is the torment the scorpions are bringing for 5 months? It's to sting or to hurt, or the locusts who have the tails like scorpions, they're hurt like scorpions. That is the false gospel, because even though false gospels are varied and many, they all have one thing in common. Not a one can save you. If you're in a church that thinks that it has a mouthpiece of God on earth, and that's not going to save you. If you're in a church where you're falling over backwards, not going to save you. If you're in a church that just thinks you have to walk down the aisle, not going to save you. All false gospels have that. When you get right down to it, that's the essence of it. They all have it in common. No matter how they cover it up, no matter how they dress it, finally, it's not going to save you. They can make all kinds of claims that it will, but it won't. And that's why God's people are coming like scorpions and serpents, because the message today we bring in many ways is very sorrowful. And that word torment has to do with sorrow. And it is a message that we have to bring because God has completed His salvation plan as far as the number of people He intended to save. But, you know, the great thing is, and the hopeful thing is that perhaps He did save you if you're not sure of your salvation, or maybe He saved you if even you were a mocker and a scoffer and you thought May 21 was a big joke. God still perhaps, there's some hope, not much really, for someone who had that mind frame, but God certainly could have saved someone by the very signs they might have been mocking. That Judgment Day, May 21, the Lord could have used His word that maybe when they got that track and they read it quickly and threw it in the trash, that individual possibly, potentially, could have become saved that before May 21, not after. And now the individual, the person, is just living their life like normal, but God made a change in them, and it's just not evident, perhaps. Even though if it's not evident 2 months or 2.5 months later, it's looking less and less likely, because God would make sure that He's going to draw that person to Himself and to His Word. And if people still have no interest and no desire in reading the Bible, well, it does seem less and less likely and less hope from the perspective of maybe the believer who it's someone in their family or their neighborhood or their friend. But, you know, a friend made a very important comment that a little hope, no matter how little, is pretty great in comparison to no hope, absolutely zero hope. A little bit of hope actually is the difference for one group of people today and another group of people today. And we see this. We're kind of forced here by God Himself to have to talk about this because we saw the locust came out of the bottomless pit, which is called a prison, in Revelation 20, verse 7. And we see the 200 million, the four messengers, which are one and the same. And look, for instance, verse 14 of Revelation 9, loose the four messengers, which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And the four messengers were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year for to slay the third part of men. And look, compare that with verse 18. By these three, speaking of the 200 million now, was the third part of men killed by the fire, by the smoke, and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. So they're both commissioned to do the exact same thing, to slay the third part of men. The four messengers, number four, has to do with the furthest extent or universality. All over the earth, God has these messengers, north, south, east, west. The four messengers are bound in Euphrates, which is a synonym for Babylon. And when are God's people loosed out of Babylon? After 70 years, which identifies with May 21. They're loosed, and their task is to kill the third part of men. And, you know, someone noticed this week, and actually I just recently noticed too, that that's a slightly different task than the locust, because it says in verse 5 of Revelation 9, and speaking of the locusts, and to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. Same word as slay later on that's used of the 200 million. Kill, slay. And the locusts, God says, don't kill. And to the 200 million, he says, kill the third part. And I guess that's not a minor difference. That's a pretty big difference. But it's the same group of people. We've been saying that now for a while. And it's talking about God's elect. But with the locust, God is focusing on one particular aspect of what he wants them to accomplish. And with the 200 million, he's looking at it slightly different. With another aspect that they are to accomplish, and yet it's speaking of the same thing, us, the elect, the children of God. They're the ones that are in view in both cases. Now, what's the third part? Let's start with that. If we go to 2 Samuel, chapter 8, and it says in just one verse, verse 2, and he smote Moab, speaking of David, and measured them with a line, casting them down to the ground. Even with two lines measured he to put to death, and with one full line to keep alive. So there's two lines, kill them, one line, save them. Keep them alive. And that's how God has really looked at the human race in some ways. It's not literal. It's not literal. It's a figurative way of looking at the human race. One third are delivered. They're spared. Two thirds are put to death. Go over to 2 Kings 1. And we find the account of a king of Israel who is sick, and so he wants to inquire of a god of another nation. And then Elijah the Tishbite is in view, and he says, let's see, in verse 6, when the messengers come back to the king, and they said unto him, there came a man up to meet us and said unto us, go, and turn again unto the king that sent you, and say unto him, thus saith Jehovah, is it not because There is not a God in Israel that thou sendest to inquire of Beelzebub, the god of Ekron. Therefore thou shalt not come down from that bed on which thou art gone up, but shalt surely die. And he said unto them, What manner of man was he which came up to meet you and told you these words? And they answered him, He was a hairy man, and girt with a girdle of leather about his loins. And he said, It is Elijah the Tishbite. Then the king sent unto him a captain of 50 with his 50. And he went up to him, and behold, he sat on the top of a hill, and he spake unto him, Thou man of God, the king has said, Come down. And Elijah answered and said to the captain of 50, If I be a man of God, then let fire come down from heaven and consume thee and thy 50. And there came down fire from heaven and consumed him and his 50. And then a second captain and his 50 come. The king sends another group. And he also is issuing Elijah a command. Come down quickly. He has the authority of the king of Israel on his side. And he's commanding Elijah, come down. Just like the first man did, pretty arrogantly. And God again, through Elijah, the fire is called down and destroys the captain and his 50. Now we can take a little lesson on how to approach God by how these two came in their arrogance. And how many people approach God that way and say, you must save me because, well, I did this or I did that, or just who I am. People can be pretty proud and arrogant. And of course, we all have pride, and unless God is leading us and drawing us to Him, or as He did prior to May 21, we would all come in that kind of a way, demanding that God hear us and God take action on our behalf. Well, you see, all that does is bring the judgment of God. Now, there's the king sends a third group in verse 13, and he sent again a captain of the third 50 with his 50. Now this captain knows what happened to the first two captains in their 50s. And so the third captain of 50 went up and came and fell on his knees before Elijah and besought him and said unto him, O man of God, I pray thee, let my life and the life of these 50 thy servants be precious in thy sight. There's a good way of going to God, very humbly, recognizing I might be struck down with fire from heaven. I might come under the judgment of God like these others because, you know, there's no difference with me than them. He was a captain like the others. He had 50 men like the others. And so very delicately he approaches, and you can tell there's fright. With fear and trembling, he's going to God, spare me, O Lord, really is what he's saying. And God tells Elijah he doesn't have to be afraid of him, go with him. So there's three captains and they're 50, 153. And except in this case, the 153 is teaching a different thing than the 153 fish. In John 21, that catch of great fish, because all 153 there pointed to the great multitude God was going to save. Here, it's more one-third and then that are spared and two-third that come under the judgment of God. And that's because, here's how God sums it up in Zechariah 13. Zechariah, right before Malachi, the last book of the Bible, or of the Old Testament. Zechariah 13 and verse 8, And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith Jehovah, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, And they shall say, Jehovah is my God. So there very clearly God says, the third part are my people. They come through the fire. And again, that would leave two-thirds that are not his people. And if you write two-thirds like a decimal, 666, as we find in Revelation 13, where it says it's the number of a man, it really should read it's the number of man, that God views the human race as represented the unsaved portion of the world, 666 or two-thirds. And the one-third have to do with those that he saves. But it's definitely not literal, because if you take the population of the earth today, as we're approaching 7 billion, or if you take it as we were approaching May 21, it was 6 billion and several hundred million that were on the earth. And in the churches, there was about 2 billion people who would say they were Christian in the world, which is about one-third of Earth's population. It's not exact, but that third part, except the problem is that God began a process of judging the churches and congregations. Judgment began at the house of God, and so that identification with the third part remained with the churches. But no longer, when the judgment began at the house of God, applied to God's elect people. We see this in Revelation 8, where reference is made to the third part repeatedly, beginning in verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of trees was burned up, and all green grass was burned up. And the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, and the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, so as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. Third part, 11 times in those verses, God is emphasizing judgment on the third part, because it's looking at the Great Tribulation, judgment on the churches and congregations of the world. 11 times here, and then 2 times in Revelation 9. So reference number 12, reference number 13, we find the third part, and it's probably not a coincidence that 13 times in these two chapters, God is looking at judgment on the third part. But there's a difference when we get to Revelation 9 of what he means by that judgment on the third part. In Revelation 8, it's the 23-year Great Tribulation period. The whole 8,400 days, the water was polluted, the sun, moon, and stars, the third part of them were darkened. They were smitten, and we know immediately after the tribulation, the sun is darkened, and the moon doesn't give its light, and the stars fall. Well, that process, or how to put it, actually, God did it already in the church, what he's doing now in the world. And so, for 23 years, the churches had no light. They had no light of Christ, no light of the gospel. No salvation was taking place. And really, we should have learned. Okay, God did it there. He's emphasizing that in chapter 8. And now we knew it would transition to the whole world, but what he did was the judgment that was on the church, which was spiritual, completely spiritual, is now on the whole world, and it's completely spiritual. The churches never even knew they were under the judgment of God, most of them. They thought and still think God's with them. No matter what kind of church, no matter how far out of a gospel they have, they still think God is with them. And yet he departed from them and he left them. And I want to look at that a little bit. What was the nature of that judgment on the churches? Because it'll help us to see the nature of what's going on today. Let's go to Revelation 20. Revelation chapter 20. And Jesus is the angel that comes down having the key of the bottomless pit. And in verse 2 and 3 it says, "And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil, and Satan, and bound him 1,000 years, and cast him into the bottomless pit, and shut him up, and set a seal upon him, that he should deceive the nations no more, till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled, or finished, and after that he must be loosed a little season." So Satan was bound, and we know that took place at the cross. And the bottomless pit, we can liken to a prison. God calls it that. It's a place of holding. Christ grabbed a hold of the devil. He arrested him, bound him, and put him into a prison. But it tells us he will be loosed for a little season. Now, after the 1,000 years, he'll come up out of the bottomless pit and be loosed. Look at Revelation 11. And referring to the two witnesses, it says in verse 7, "And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascendeth out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them, and shall overcome them and kill them." The beast is Satan's name that God has given him primarily, if not exclusively, for the 23-year Great Tribulation period. He has many names: the devil, Satan, the serpent, the dragon, the beast, the man of sin, the abomination of desolation. But the beast is that name that God has given him in particular, as he ruled over the churches and congregations for those 23 years. And actually, the name beast, or the word beast, is only found in the book of Revelation, except in one case, and that's in Acts 28. In Acts chapter 28, after the shipwreck. And that ship, which was destroyed by the waves, is pointing to the church, as God likens the church to a ship. And so the ship is destroyed, and all the men that were on board, 276, make it to the island of Malta, which still exists today. We were trying to get a track trip to Malta before May 21, but it never happened. But I'm sure that God got the message to them. And it's also known as Melita. And so they all escaped to this island called Melita. And then in verse 2, "And the barbarous people showed us no little kindness, for they kindled a fire and received us every one because of the present rain and because of the cold. And when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks." Now, Mr. Camping did a study on this years ago, indicating how the word where he had gathered this bundle of sticks is actually a multitude. It's a multitude of sticks pointing to all those that were saved during the Great Tribulation. And they're put on the fire because we're now identified with Christ and the payment that he made baptized with the baptism that he was baptized with. And so this multitude of sticks, we can look at it the same way we look at 153 fish. A great multitude, a multitude of fish were brought in. And then God taught us something there in John 21 concerning these last 5 months of feeding sheep. Well, here I think he's teaching us something too, because a multitude of sticks are gathered and laid them on the fire. There came a viper out of the heat and fastened on his hand. And remember, Paul is a person that God uses at times to represent the believers. He's a pattern of the believers, we read in, I think it's 2 Timothy. And he's a type and a figure of the true believers. And this viper fastens on his hand, and when the barbarian saw the venomous beast, now that's the word, hang on his hand, they said among themselves, no doubt this man is a murderer, whom, though he has escaped the sea, yet vengeance suffereth not to live. And he shook off the beast into the fire and felt no harm. And that's exactly what's going on today, because the beast is that name that God has given Satan to as he ruled in the churches. Well, that's past. It's over. The multitude has been gathered in. And that happened before May 21 came. And once that happened, the Great Tribulation ended. Satan's rule ended. And now he comes against the people of God. No harm. Just shake him off. Right into the fire. He's lost power. He's lost authority. And he really can't hurt the child of God or the people of God, because God's already done it. He's already saved all of his elect. What can Satan do now? He was expert at trying to hinder that process. He was very good at trying to make sure that an individual would not be saved and not be translated out of his kingdom into the kingdom of God. I mean, that's what the whole battle was about all through history. Him trying to prevent God from accomplishing the purpose of saving everyone that God had said he would save and obligated himself to save. And now that's done. It's done. He's an adversary, but he can't prevent that because it's already accomplished. And so the beast is thrown into the fire. And now we've noticed that. Remember, the fire and brimstone is falling now, and the judgment falls. It says in Revelation 16, and it's talking about our present time. In Revelation 16, verse 10, and the fifth angel or messenger poured out his vial upon the seat of the beast. The seat, the man of sin takes his seat in the temple. To be seated means you're ruling. Where was the seat of the beast? Well, he was seated in the Baptist and in the Episcopalian and in the Catholic and in the Presbyterian and in the every church you can name. He was seated there ruling in the congregations, showing himself that he was God in his pride, in his arrogancy. And yet now the seven last plagues, one of them very specifically, you know, like one of those directional bombs, God just points it right at the seat of the beast, at the rule of Satan, he brings him down with all of his pomp. And it says, the vial upon the seat of the beast and his kingdom was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain. And that's a sad way of looking at it. You know, if we would put on spiritual glasses, because we're living in a natural world, and you put on spiritual glasses and God gives you some sight to see what he's saying in his word, then you do see it and you understand. Well, of course, if the sun has been darkened and the moon's not giving its light and the stars have fallen, there's darkness over the earth. spiritually. And the kingdom of Satan is now full of darkness. Because it's not only the church, now it's been expanded to the whole world. And God uses Babylon, yes, to typify the churches at times, but also to typify the world, as Satan had as he was loosed, and we see how the world worshiped the beast, and how much sin has multiplied over the last 23 years in all the world. Okay, let's go. We see he's loosed in Revelation 20, and we find immediately upon his loosing in Revelation 11, 7, what's the first thing he does? Well, he goes and haunts a house. That's where you'll find Satan and the demons, right? They're in abandoned houses or farms, and they rattle doors. They might play with that. They might play with mankind doing that kind of thing. But Satan's interest is always the same. He wants to be like God. That's why he entered into the Garden of Eden, and what it was all about there, that Eve and Adam would believe him over God, and then he would be the ruler. And it's what it's about all through history. Satan has focused his attack on churches and congregations until they would become synagogues of Satan. And it's what it's about through the Great Tribulation. When he was loosed, let me add him, where did he go? He ascends out of the bottomless pit. Now, some people might be thinking that the believers were killed on May 21, 2011. No. No, did Satan ascend out of the bottomless pit on May 21, 2011? If it said he ascended, past tense, maybe we could look at it. But this is something that happened initially upon his loosing, which was back May 21, 1988. And he comes out of the bottomless pit, makes war, and overcomes them and kills them. Look at Revelation 13. And here the beast, again, Satan's name for the 23-year period. And it describes this. Of course, it's not literal. You know, he's like a leopard and a bear, a lion, and so on. And then in verse 3, and I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. He received a death blow in 33 AD when Christ went to the cross. And he was bound for 1,000 years. Another figurative statement pointing to the whole church age of 1955 actual years. And then he's loosed and he comes back with seeming no restraints on his power, on his authority. It seems like he can do anything he wants, or it did seem that way, that all the evil that he is behind and yet was restrained to some degree, now it's just unleashed. I mean, we all know it. All you have to do is take a look at the world over the last 23 years and look at it prior to that. And even though the world was still sinful, it still had some recognition of the marriage relationship. It still had some recognition. Sunday was God's day. I remember growing up, as a teenager in the 70s, and most of the stores were closed. Or in the late 60s, the blue laws were still in effect. And that's the 20th century America, you know. But now, Sunday's like any other day. And there's still homosexuality was in the closet. And look at it now. It's legal in states, and it's all over the place. And so in many, many ways, there's been a big change in the world compared to how it was. And, of course, it was never good in the world. But, you know, God kept a lid on things to a large degree. But now the lid's off. It's off, and Satan was loosed. And then it says in verse 4, and they worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power or authority was given unto him to continue 42 months. There's a limitation there. 42 months, which is another way of saying the length of the Great Tribulation. God uses different amounts of time. He speaks of the 70 years that Babylon came against Judah. He refers to a seven-year period in the days of Jacob and Joseph. He refers to 3.5 days in Revelation 11, or 42 months. And in Revelation 11, in verse 2, but the court, which is without the temple, leave out and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. The length of the Great Tribulation, that's the holy city, the churches, will be tread underfoot for this figurative period of time, which works out the 23 exact years, from May 21, 88 to May 21, 2011, 8,400 days. Just like those other types, you know, figures that God uses, 70 years is 840 months. 7 years is 84 months. 3.5 days is 84 hours. And here, 42 months doesn't work into that quite, but it's half of that. And I don't know fully why God does that, except it's also another way of saying 3.5 years. But this 42 months represents the complete length of time that the church was under judgment. Judgment began at the house of God, and then it ended on the house of God, the churches, on May 21, just a couple months ago. So here we find in Revelation 13, it's given, authority is given him. Look at Jeremiah 25. And we'll see in what way God is giving Satan authority, or did give him authority. In verse 9, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith Jehovah, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, who's a type of Satan in the Bible. God says of him, my servant, and will bring them against this land, and against the inhabitants thereof, and against all these nations round about, and will utterly destroy them, and make them an astonishment, and a hissing, and perpetual desolations. Moreover, I will take from them the voice of mirth, and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom, and the voice of the bride, the sound of the millstones, and the light of the candle. And this whole land shall be a desolation, and an astonishment, and these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Serve Satan. It is what God is saying. He's going to raise him up as an instrument of judgment. Historically, he did with Nebuchadnezzar. He brought them against his own people, the Jews, the nation of Judah. And for this 70-year period, it was a terrible time historically for Judah. And that's a figure of what God did with Satan to the churches for the 23 years. But then look in verse 12. And it shall come to pass when 70 years are accomplished, that's when they're finished, that I will punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith Jehovah, for their iniquity in the land of the Chaldeans, and I will make it perpetual desolations. So there, you're given authority. Nebuchadnezzar was called his servant, the king of Babylon, for a particular period of time. But then God turns around, and really, even though God used him, it was really the sins of Nebuchadnezzar and his lusts and his pride and his arrogance, that he did all these things. God just let him do them, and that's how he could use him. And it's the same with Satan. Satan completely sinfully has entered into the churches and destroyed the churches, accomplishing the will of God in the process, but it's his sin. And so when that period is up, and it's up, then God turns right around and says, all right, now you, it's your turn. Your turn. You're under judgment, Satan. You're under judgment, the kingdom of Satan. And that's where we're at right now, that Satan has entered into judgment, and God is judging the world. If we go back to Revelation 9, we're going to try and answer that question, why the locusts are commanded not to kill, and the 200 million are commanded to kill. And it says in verse 18 again, by these three was the third part of men killed, by the fire, and by the smoke, and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths, for their power or authority. And by the way, the locusts are given authority, the 200 million are given authority, not Satan, it can't be. He's done. He's done. That's how we know that the locusts are the people of God, the 200 million horsemen are the people of God. There no way is it Satan or his emissaries in any sense. It's got to be God's people, because this is referring to the 5 months after the Great Tribulation, the time now where God is judging Satan and judging his kingdom. It's the transition. And so the 200 million are given authority in their mouth and in their tails, for their tails were like unto serpents and had heads, and with them they do hurt. It's really terribly sad, but God, he warned everyone. He warned the churches. He warned the congregations. Look, the church age is over. Their testimony is finished, and it's time for you to come out of the church. If you don't come out, you're just going to be a tear. You're going to be bundled like a tear for the fire. God warned and warned and warned, get out of the church. Get out of the church. He said again and again and again, and people disregarded it. Some, only by God's grace could anyone actually hearken to that and obey it. It had to be him drawing one of his elect, and certainly there were some here and there all over the world that God opened their eyes, and for whatever reason they did get out prior to May 21. But anyone who stayed, who remained, they were told, look, you're in a situation where Satan is reigning, he's ruling in the churches, the Spirit of God has left, therefore there cannot be any salvation. You're taking your family into a situation where they can't be blessed. You have to get them out of the church. And if people, they just kept saying, well, no man knows a day or hour, and my church is faithful, and my pastor, he preaches the truth. Well, you're not listening. They could preach whatever they want to preach, but God removed his Spirit. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God, but it takes God to apply that to the heart of someone, to a listener. And if he's not there, you can preach faithfully. You can talk all day long faithfully, but it takes God to apply it to the heart to make someone born again. And that wasn't happening in any church in the world. There was spiritual darkness in all churches. And the hope was, come out of the church, because God is working in the world. He's saving a great multitude. And as soon as a person listened to God on that point, and they came out, and they said, oh, I'm not going back in there, well, then they were in a position where God could potentially save them. And now that we're two-thirds of the world are, two-thirds of the world are involved in other religions, They're involved in no religion. They're just secular. They're agnostic. They're atheists. They don't believe anything. And so those two-thirds at least were outside of that place leading up to May 21 where God was saving. But the one-third that were left in the churches or that remained in the churches and they wouldn't listen to God, they refused to obey, they refused to listen. From May 20th, when maybe they, who knows if they had any thoughts at all, maybe they just said, I'm going to trust my pastor, I'm going to trust my church, I'm just going to trust the whole congregation, nobody else is leaving, so I'm staying. Okay, May 20th went to May 21, and Judgment Day came. Now, God shut the door to heaven. He saved all of his elect. And now we have a third of the world's population that remain in their church where there was no salvation possible. And then we move over into the judgment day itself of 153 days where there is no salvation possible. What happened to one third of the world's population? They're killed. They're dead. Spiritually, as God views them, they were in a situation, I mean, if you just look at it like that, where God isn't saving. They didn't come out. And then, immediately to the next day of May 21 and thereafter, God's not saving. So, where's the hope? Where's the hope? You see, that's why the locusts and the 200 million are one and the same. They're bringing the same message. But it's the very same message that kills the third part. It slays them. It really is tragic because it's like they have been bundled and they're cast into the fire. The fire and brimstone, it's not literal. It's not literal, but it's what identifies with the 200 million. And now they're under the judgment of God. Now this helps us understand something. That, you know, we were confused a little bit. We had pretty much things worked out. If there would be a great physical earthquake and it was the day of the rapture and the day of the resurrection, we thought we had a lot of verses worked out. But when it didn't happen physically like that, we wondered, well, then how are those in the churches going to receive more stripes than those not in the churches? And, I mean, everybody seems fine. Here, as we're going along, how would they get more stripes? Look at Luke chapter 12. And in beginning in verse 45, it says, But and if that servant say in his heart, My Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to beat the men servants and maidens, and to eat and drink and to be drunken, the Lord of that servant will come in a day when he looketh not for him, and at an hour when he is not aware, and will cut him in sunder, and will appoint him his portion with the unbelievers. And that servant which knew his Lord's will, and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes, but he that knew not, and did commit things worthy of stripes, shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required, and to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more. So you have more stripes, and who knew their Lord's will, and those that didn't, few stripes. Now go back to Revelation 9, and we read that the third part, the 200 million, are commissioned to slay the third part. And then look in verse 20. And the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of the works of their hands. So the rest of the men, it means that which is left. It's the word translated as remnant. They were not killed by these plagues because these plagues were specifically focused on the third part. The Greek word translated as plagues is plague. And everyone's familiar, or most are, with Revelation 22:18. If you add to the words of this book, the plagues written herein will be added to you. That's the word. It means like it sounds. It's the judgment of God, the wrath of God. And it's also the word translated as stripes that we just read in Luke chapter 12. That they will receive more plagues, more stripes. Or you could bring stripes. Sometimes it helps when God wrote the Bible that way and he uses one Greek word but several or a couple of English words, and you move them around and you see, does that help understand that verse? Well, Revelation 9:20, and the rest of the men which were not killed by these stripes, there are more stripes for the third part. More. Because these men were not killed by it. They were designed to kill the third part. The rest of the men, they're not going to receive that particular stripe. That's not for them. Because they were in the world. They're tormented. It's awful to hear that God isn't saving today, but at least they can have the hope. Anyone who had nothing to do with any church, you weren't a member, you're an atheist. An atheist can have this hope that maybe God did something in my heart. Maybe he saved me. Slight little bit of hope. On the other hand, if I was in a church, then what hope is there? I was in a situation where God wasn't saving, and that was bad, and now I'm in a situation where God's not saving anywhere in the world, and that's worse. So where could that third part find salvation when they're going from that position to this position? Well, we're going to stop and close with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we do thank you for your salvation and that you are guiding us each step of the way. And Father, we just pray for mercy on our families. We actually pray we know, we've always known you had to elect the people from the foundation of the world. And so we always looked back and prayed, oh, could our children be one of your elect? And now we find we have to look back also to see if you applied that salvation to them. And so we pray that you might have had mercy. And they don't know it yet. But may you have mercy and help us to keep praying for them. And we do ask for grace to help us in everything that we do at this time. And we pray these things in Christ's name. Amen.